Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Thursday, January 9th. This is 2020. I am your host, Kelly Gamont, and with me today, I'm probably going to do that, by the way, until late December. Just spoiler alert for everyone. It will pop up occasionally because it makes me happy. With me today, I have two fantastic panelists to talk to us. I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, I am suffering a little bit from virus, so my voice is different.
That's
I'm
okay.
Here. I'm here.
And I'm glad you're here with us. I'm glad to listen to you talk. And also, because even though you're a little bit under the weather today, there's still a high possibility that you could be wrong. So with us today, I have Charlotte Henry.
Hello. Have I been on this year? Hello.
I don't think so.
Happy 2020. If I don't think I have. No. Cool.
And happy 2020 as well.
It's lucky. It's just a quiet week for tech, really. There's nothing much for us to discuss.
It's not like there's a lot happening. So, yeah. So today we're here to share our favorite holiday baking tips. No.
Yeah.
That's what we're here for. And John will inevitably talk about his favorite recipe that he got from a fan-printed Dickinson cookbook. I'm totally kidding. No, today the first thing we want to talk about is Apple being at CES or not. Well, we're going to talk about they haven't been going for quite a while. I think, John, you may be able to help me out on this. I think they did go kind of in the early years of Apple. They would sort of put in an appearance to sort of check it off the list.
I don't remember Apple ever having a booth or a stall.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. I actually wrote about this yesterday.
And?
So Jane Horvath, who is the Senior Director for Global Privacy at Apple, she was there this year. And that is the first time in, like, I think 20 years or something that Apple has had any official representation there.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about is I wanted to say that they used to sort of be there, even if they maybe weren't in like a great big stall or something next to a giant TV.
Sorry, it's actually near 30 years. It's been 28 years since there's been an official Apple representative at CES.
It's a booth. The first time I heard Charlotte say the word stall, I thought of Ed the Talking Horse.
Mr. Ed. Let's put this in slight context and just wind up John a bit.
Yes.
I can't even deal with that. Apple has basically not sent anyone to the world's biggest consumer tech show for most of my life.
Right. For as long as they've been consumer.
Since I was four.
Like a big consumer tech company, they basically haven't been going.
Right.
Yeah.
I can put some color on that because I've been to those shows and I've managed booths at supercomputing. Mm-hmm. And been at Apple booths at Macworld and does a volunteer Macworld San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Apple has a particular allergy to those people in the booths confronting the public because they can't control the message. People who are Apple fans, you know, people who are experienced at squeezing every little bit of iota of information out. They will rally around. They will bug you. They'll become fans. They'll be irritating. They'll sit there and talk to you until they get some glimmer of some idea that the question has been answered, or there's some juicy tidbit of prognostication, or some offhand comment that a booth representative will make. Mm-hmm. And Apple got annoyed with that, and it's a lot of effort and a lot of logistics to, you know, it's expensive to set up those booths and have a pavilion, and Apple, being a trillion-dollar company, needs to have a very impressive big booth, you know, 1,000 square feet with carpeting and special lighting. And then what happens is that Apple fans congregate around and loiter and bug the people, and there's not a lot of payoff in terms of generating sales. There's very little ROI. It's return on investment. It's mostly promotion. So I can understand how Apple in the past has been allergic to that, but these are solvable problems. And I was thinking this morning during the morning meeting when I triggered this discussion, was Do the arguments that Apple made in the past about being sufficient to present their side of their products, are the retail stores sufficient? You know, the Apple has argued that they don't need to go to CES because everybody loves them and knows them, and there's a retail store handy. But you know, retail stores are still thin. There's some states that don't even have one anymore. Mm-hmm. They never did have a retail store. So the question is, does Apple needs to kind of grow up and get its act together and make an appearance at CES and be a big boy player? And the next question in my mind is, has Apple's reluctance to engage in partnerships and appear at CES hampered their home automation efforts, because CES is home automation plus?
So can I jump in here?
Absolutely.
Please.
You just
please.
Did.
So yeah, that's true. I'm kind of siding with John on this. I think it's a bit weird for the world's biggest consumer electronics company not to be at the world's biggest consumer electronics show.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It kind of doesn't sit well with me. I think what John is politely hinting at, and feel free to correct me, is actually a slight arrogance with Apple, which we know is there. There's a kind of sense of, we're too good to do this. All the other companies, even Microsoft, go
I
to
think
CES.
That, even that's the cover story. I mean, I think that's the self-rationalization for deeper motives.
Well, perhaps that's so. And I think there is something to be said. Look, we all know that however much we can all communicate with people here, there, and everywhere now, often there's nothing that replaces meeting people face-to-face.
Mm-hmm.
For all its faults and all the things we could laugh and kind of roll our eyes at about CES, it obviously is a place where some business gets done.
Yes.
The home automation example from John, I think, is a pertinent one. You know, I wrote today about how Bosch is going to integrate HomeKit and Apple Home. Their smart home system is going to be compatible with HomeKit.
Mm-hmm.
Which is great, but the you know, it's coming after Google Assistant and Alexa. Apple is not the first company that it's going to partner with. Just these little things. Look, you don't know whether turning up and buying a massive booth at CES would make any difference, but there is always, I think, something to be said about being in the room.
Absolutely. I think
absolutely.
So.
Absolutely. I think so too.
I would be willing to put money on Apple being there in an unofficial capacity occasionally, particularly sort of, I would say, you know, pre-iPhone, that I would guess that there are people from Apple who do go. I would bet that when Tim Cook was COO and it was operations and he was all supply chain and everything, I would be reasonably convinced that he went during those times. I think... Charlotte, like you're talking about there being something to somebody being in the room. I think that's why I'm a little surprised this year that we didn't see them, but I would put money on seeing them next year. Because
that's an interesting point.
Well, because as we've talked about before, the CHIP project, this connected home over IP initiative that Google and Amazon and Apple are all part of.
Mm.
Along with, I think it's Zigbee is part of the alliance. It's either Zigbee or Z-Wave, because one of the two is not part of it. And I hope to hear more from John Braun about that from CES, because that was the question he was going to ask everybody is, are you part of this? Or, you know, and if not, why not? And part of that is because the connected home stuff is important. And connected home, Internet of Things, automated smart home devices continue to take up more and more space at CES. And we've continued to see that evolve even from the times when I was covering CES for a different website. And, you know, it's one thing to have a light bulb you can turn on and off with your phone, but having a bunch of stuff that all works together and is
right.
Secure, so that's not an easy way for somebody to get into your network. You know, making all of those things possible. I think that's a thing where Apple's going to have to represent. I don't think they want to. I don't think it's necessarily a thing they enjoy. But if they're part of this initiative, then everybody from the initiative should be there in order to talk to everybody else.
What you just said is very important, Kelly. When you go to CES, you become embroiled in the imperial effects. You get involved with the state of the art as the industry sees it. And often Apple has a different vision than the consumer industry goes. And sometimes it's for the sake of expediency or money or just by just momentum, the industry will go off in one direction. And Apple sometimes is reluctant to get sucked into that and wants to maintain their own integrity and their own vision of the way things go. And they just, you know, going to CES and mingling with other people and partnering with other people just kind of dilutes Apple and makes them not special anymore, just part of the mainstream and the flow, and they lose control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just to kind of sum up on this, I think actually there's a very good point there, because look, Apple's events, can you think of another tech company that gets people tuning into YouTube and on websites to watch this stuff? I last Apple event, I was in an Apple store reporting on it for us, and it was full of people. Mm-hmm. Like, who, not, you know, not just nerds like us, but people who are really into Apple products. And Apple, of course, can control the process from beginning to end. Everything is how Apple wants it, which is, you know, a classic Apple characteristic. And obviously, in a big tech show, in a big industry show like CES, that is not the case.
Right.
Right.
And
that said, though, are those obstacles able to be overcome? Does Apple need to rethink the modern situation?
Yes.
Or is everything as it always has been in the past and there's no need to alter Apple's thinking?
Okay, I said yes, but now I think the answer to your question, in my opinion, John, is yes to both of those questions. Because what Apple used to do before OS X, even in the early days of OS X, and even now, and this is going to sound like a very small thing, but I'm going somewhere. If you take a Windows formatted USB drive and you plug it into your Mac, you can still see the basic stuff on it. If it's just a bunch of Word documents, you can see their Word documents. If you have Word installed, you can open them. If you have Pages installed, you can open them. Because Apple understands, or at least always did understand, that Mac OS wasn't the only game in town. And so they needed to do a tiny bit of work in order to acknowledge that there was another operating system, and sometimes you had to do things with those files. And so Mac OS has always allowed you to at least see those files, even if you couldn't do anything with them. Well, you could at least read the contents of the drive.
Kelly, I don't know if you're going here, but every one of Apple's specialty office apps will open up the Windows analog.
Oh, I know.
Like Numbers opens up Excel, yeah. Pages opens up Word.
Like I said, if you have Pages installed, it'll open it.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing to me about that is that if you took a Mac OS formatted USB drive and you plugged it into Windows, and this has been the case as long as I can remember having to support both platforms, it goes, what did you give me? It looks like a USB drive. Do you want to format it so that I can read it? Because I have no knowledge of Mac OS. And the reason that's interesting to me is because Mac OS still does this, and I feel like they know they're not the only game in town when it comes to operating
Apple
systems on the desktop.
Apple hasn't granted a license to Microsoft to do that very thing.
Well, to read a file system?
Yeah.
I didn't know you needed a license to be able to read a file system. They're Unix files now. Like, it's a Unix file system on that drive. But the point is,
no, it's not. They're not Unix files. They're specially formatted files.
Well, the point I'm trying to make is that Apple recognized they weren't the only game in town when it came to Mac OS. And on the smart home side, they have to recognize they're not the only game in town. And I think part of doing that is the chip alliance that they made with Google and Amazon and these other hardware makers so that they can be part of that conversation. As Charlotte said, there's something to be said for being in the room. And so for HomeKit to be compatible with all this stuff, they all have to meet a certain level of security, which means admin isn't going to get you into all this stuff. And I think that as that stuff becomes more prevalent at CES and people get more interested in it and it becomes more approachable and it becomes more of a thing that people want to have in their houses, that Apple's going to have to start repping at CES on that end of things. Like, I'm not seeing, you know, services like Dropbox is not at CES, Box, OneDrive, like, those folks aren't making a special trip to CES. Those are services. And so if Apple wants to be a services company, it's not like they're going to be there going like, Apple Music is fantastic and getting a booth for it. That's not going to happen. But to be part of CHIP and the smart home stuff and for HomeKit to be something people take seriously, I think they are going to have to start going to Vegas in January. And it should not be the issue that it used to be now that we're, you know, far enough away from Macworld that they used to think they had to do something every January and they don't anymore.
I don't think the ordinary consumer understands Apple's motivations as we have described them during this show.
Right.
All they see is Apple being kind of arrogant and thinking they don't need to be there, and that's a bad public relations.
But I also don't know how many of those people are also paying a whole lot of attention to what else comes out of CES, because most people think of CES and just go, oh, it's a super giant television show and maybe a weird car, and that's it. Like, I don't know how many consumers are paying attention to the Consumer Electronics Show, is what I'm saying.
Oh, another thing that comes up, and that is I've been writing about Apple and robotics for years, and Apple has shown a steadfast resistance to getting into consumer robotics. But consumer robotics is a big thing at CES, and
absolutely,
if Apple's going to prepare to get into home automation, home service robots, eventually they're going to have to show up at CES for that reason as well.
Yeah. And speaking of CES,
not to mention their ride sharing car, which is coming. Yes,
sure. We'll say that. We'll say yes.
Sure.
Speaking of CES, we do have Dave Hamilton and John Braun there. Your hosts of Mac Geek Gab are live on the show floor. They've been posting video and articles about the things that they've covered and some of the companies that they've met while they are there. And part of the reason they're able to do that is because of our sponsors. And our sponsor for today's show is Carbon Copy Cloner from Bombic Software. And the reason that you need to know about this is because you can create an exact snapshot of your APFS, which is the new format from Apple for your file system, your APFS formatted source and destination volume. So if you want to make an exact copy of your hard drive, your internal drive, onto an external drive, you can totally do that. It can make a read-only snapshot so that you can't mess that stuff up if you're trying to do something else with a backup. You can view a list of all the snapshots that are available. You can see how much space they take. You can delete one with the press of a button. Time Machine will delete stuff after 24 hours, but with Carbon Copy Cloner, you can define your own data retention strategy. If you want to keep all of them forever and you have the space to do it, you do you. If you have an OS update that goes bad, don't worry about it. Just boot from your backup system, go to that recovery volume, and restore the entire system from the previous snapshot. Takes a few clicks. You go make a sandwich, you come back, your computer's where you left it. Like I said, those snapshots are read-only. They can't be manipulated by other stuff like malware. And so they also provide excellent protection against ransomware. If somebody, you know, if you end up getting your machine locked down for some reason, don't worry about it. Just restore to that previous from Carbon Copy Cloner and you're all good. It's 100% compatible with Catalina. And as I said, APFS formatted volumes. If you are thinking of upgrading, you can absolutely do that by going to, if you're thinking of upgrading to Catalina, you can totally do that. And if you don't like it, it's very easy to roll back by using Carbon Copy Cloner. It is your Mac's undo button. And if you go to bombic.com/CES, you can get a special offer from them as part of our, as a special offer as part of their sponsorship. And that is bombic.com/CES. bombic.com/CES. We'll take you to their landing page, especially for our coverage. Thank you so much to Carbon Copy Cloner and Bombic Software for sponsoring our coverage, because we literally could not do what we do at CES every year without them. So thank you. I would also like to talk briefly about another thing that has happened this week, and that was the Golden Globes. And Apple got nominated for a couple of things at the Golden Globes. Spoiler alert, which, you know, it happened Sunday and I'm telling you about it Thursday. Apple didn't win any awards.
No.
Not one. They were nominated, so, you know, yay. But they didn't win anything, and that sort of got us thinking about how we heard a whole lot about the first wave of shows, the stuff that Apple TV Plus launched with. And I personally have seen a couple of ads here and there for a couple of other shows that are on TV Plus while I was watching cable television. I've seen a couple of commercials, but I haven't seen anybody having a conversation around some of this second wave of content that I've been seeing, that I saw around the morning show, for example, the recaps that we did, that Charlotte did for us on the morning show. I'm not seeing anybody doing that for the new stuff. I'm not seeing anybody talking about some of that stuff. Like, I saw more conversation about Snoopy in space than I've seen about the new M. Night Shyamalan show that's debuting on TV Plus.
To be fair, Snoopy in space is great.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
But no, I think there is a pertinent point here. But there's a couple of things. First of all, it's interesting. So I think we can't underestimate what a big deal it was that Apple got nominated for stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That is a big deal.
Yes.
That is kind of the media world saying, well, come on in. But also, I think they will be disappointed they didn't win stuff. There was obviously that slightly awkward moment where Ricky Gervais was made jokes and took the mick out of Apple and the sweatshops in China, alleged, where Tim Cook is sitting there in his tux squirming.
So, like, and then didn't Jennifer Aniston have to come out right after he made that joke, basically.
Yeah. About 30 seconds later, he's the host of the first award, Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah.
Fine. Look, I think you're right. I think the novelty has worn off. But, you know, there are some big names and some big stars involved in this. And I think I just posted an interview with Variety with one of the makers of the next show. So that's... You know, that stuff is important, and it's going to keep building the TV brand. There's a new comedy called Mythic Quest.
Mm-hmm.
There's an interview with Variety that we linked to on the site with Rog McElhenney, excuse my pronunciation, who wrote it, is an actor in it. Like, there's some serious stuff going on Apple TV Plus, but you're right. I mean, I saw there were adverts in London on the Tube Network and stuff for the morning show. There's nothing like that for any of the next.
It's pretty clear that Apple had to front end load their very best stuff to get people's attention.
Mm-hmm.
And now the second tier stuff is coming out and it's showing.
Well, yeah, and you had to prove to people that this was something worth worth them signing up for.
Right.
Right.
And even right now, it's still enticing people to investigate, not invest, because everybody that got an iPhone for Christmas is getting it for free. Everybody that bought a phone this year, everybody that went to an 11 or an 11 Pro, all those folks get a free year. If you got an Apple TV for Christmas for that TV that didn't have anything else hooked up to it, you get a year. You know, it's very Oprah style. Everybody gets a free year.
I was about to do it. You get a free year. You get a free year. You all get a free year.
Everybody gets a year. So what this really means to me is, like I've talked about on the show before.
I'm so glad we're in sync.
Yes. Month 13 is the thing I want to know about. And so if Apple's just continuing to put out content for the sake of content, what I really want to know is what's going to come next November, once everybody's subscriptions have run out. November and December, what are we going to actually get from them that's going to make people pay? Because that's the part that's important.
Here's a question.
Yeah?
Would you guys pay, at this moment, $4.99 a month?
Yep.
Why? Just for Dickinson.
I wouldn't even flinch.
Right.
Well, John has Victorian reasons for why he would pay. Yes.
Sure.
I would because I figure if I watch two episodes of any of those programs a month, that's easily $5 of value to me. So
that's fair.
So it would be a no-brainer.
So for me, I've really enjoyed the morning show, obviously. I'm trying to think, if I didn't need it for work, would I be paying for it?
Yep.
And I'm, at this moment, not convinced. I do want to watch For All Mankind, because space.
Yeah.
I'm kind of intrigued to get into the Oprah Book Club, and as a cartoon, I've enjoyed a few little quick episodes of Snoopy in space.
Mm-hmm.
Could my life be okay without all of those things?
Okay. Yeah.
And I've enjoyed Dickinson. I have enjoyed Dickinson. I want to watch
Have you gotten past the first episode, Charlie?
No, I haven't. I'm going to watch the whole thing in a proper way. But
you're going to love it.
That is a whole other episode of TDO, as far as I'm concerned. There's a whole other show that binging is the proper way. Because one thing that John and I mentioned on background mode, talking about The Mandalorian, was how delightful it was to have a week between every episode.
Let me comment on The Mandalorian here for a second.
Finish my point then?
Yes.
You can tell me why I should need to watch The Mandalorian.
Yes.
Binging, yeah. So there's obviously binging, which is lovely. but also I think I wouldn't be paying for it. I would maybe do a free month to watch the morning show, which obviously they do try, you know, once it all been out, to try and binge watch that. And I don't know I would pay. I think this second wave of stuff is going to be crucial. Is it worth it? I thought the critics were pretty unfair on the first lot of stuff, which I think mostly is pretty good. I have no interest in shirtless Jason Momoa running around in sea, but apart
that's
from
on
that,
you, sure.
Like, to be fair, there's so much I could say there, but also I just feel like there isn't enough for me. One show and a few things I'm loosely enjoying is not quite enough.
Can I loosely amplify on that?
Yes.
So I've watched every episode of the morning show and I liked it as it went on. And I watched every episode of Dickinson. And these shows have high production values, but they are limited in their scope. They're no more extensive or exhaustive or complicated or technically demanding than any other TV series. Mm-hmm. Even though the production values are clearly high, especially for the morning show where there's, you know, high quality stars, high quality sets, high production values. And then I watched The Mandalorian and I thought, Disney has the wherewithal through Pixar and Marvel. They have the experience and the technological ability in the studios to create content like The Mandalorian that is head and shoulders above anything Apple has done and may ever do.
And I think Lucasfilm is the magic to that one, John.
Yeah, they have experience and they have the technology to develop shows like The Mandalorian, which is just amazing and awesome. And it kind of shows that Apple's still, you know, getting its feet wet when it comes to the major sci-fi productions.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, Disney already had the systems in place and the infrastructure to make a Star Wars movie.
Well,
so
that's
making
you leverage off what you got.
Exactly. So making slightly more than a movie's worth of Star Wars wasn't a big deal. And so, you know, and that's the thing that we have talked about here repeatedly, like, you know, Apple has to figure out, you know, how to get people to work for them and write shows and have a place to film them and get someone to write scripts and get someone to edit and all those things that go into making a TV show. And they're starting from zero because it's not like they had all of that in the first place.
Well, yeah, but they have all the money.
Now we see Disney's strategy, you know, for years and years, there were these editorials about Apple should buy Disney, you know, 10-15 years ago, and Apple should buy this and buy that. Disney has been very thoughtful and crafty in their technology development and acquiring Marvel and acquiring Lucasfilm. And it's showing what their strategy is, and it's very well thought out.
And I will say one thing that Apple TV Plus and Disney Plus have in common is the fact that like The Morning Show came out every week, The Mandalorian came out every week, some shows have come out all at once, like Netflix's approach is we're just going to give you all of them right now, and you know, if you don't have the intestinal fortitude to watch 16 episodes of a show all at once all weekend long, then you know, maybe stay off the internet because there are people there who do. And I liked the time in between each episode of The Mandalorian because it gave me a chance to talk about it with all my nerd friends. You know, I understand the wanting to binge it, but I really did like it being weekly, and that was a lot of fun. So
I like more being able to watch it in my own time. Like, you know, I'm joking about Orange is the New Black, but you know, I've watched that, bit kind of binge watched that, as I say, in, you know, at different paces. I still haven't watched the last season. I will settle down to it at some point. So I think there's that. I'm conflicted about this because I understand your argument, but equally I think the benefit of streaming is that we can watch stuff when we want.
But I like there being a week between. Like, I can watch it. I can watch The Mandalorian over the weekend, but I still don't get a new one until next Friday.
Yeah, I can see that. I'm both for and against it.
Yes.
Well, you just buffer up, Charlotte, and watch some other show, and you let it go, you know, a week at a time, and by the time you get around to it, then the shows are all there. You just have to kind of manage your schedule.
Yeah,
it's not like I didn't
schedule.
Want The Mandalorian all at once, but I really enjoyed having to ration it out. I thought it was fun. So that's going to do it for us today. I want to thank
we
both
have
of you.
Spoken.
I want to thank both of you for being here today. John, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Sorry about my voice.
That's okay. I know you're feeling under the weather, so I'm glad you made the extra effort to join me today. Also, Charlotte, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
And I'm your host, Kelly Gamon. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.